Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, and the reporter Nick Keyser here with you. We'll give those Prez tickets away during Colton Sissons, so be listening for that when he comes up at 10:30. But it's mock draft season, and I looked through a few of these last night. You know, Dane Brugler is always a good one. Obviously, Kiper and McShay, those are, you know, the standards. NFL.com, they have one up. That you know, I like to look at. I mean, it's truly that time of year. Lance Zierlein has his up. He actually did. He did a 2.0, and then some moves happened, so he did a 2.1. But he's the only one that had something different between the three that I looked at when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. Now, where they all have something in common is it's all an offensive tackle. It's just the different ones. Kiper, McShay, and then Dane Brugler of The Athletic all have the Tennessee Titans at 11, selecting who do you think? Paris Johnson Jr., the offensive tackle from Ohio State. Zierlein is going with Peter Skorinski, the junior from Northwestern, which I think, look, if that's where they end up, if they end up with either one of those guys, I'm going to feel good about it when it comes to the left tackle. That's a win if they stay at 11. Now, that's the other question. Are they going to stay at 11? I am becoming, as we get closer and closer to things, and I obviously want to see how free agency pans out, I could see them moving out of 11 and moving back, not moving up to get a quarterback. I think they can move back and acquire more picks. I even heard Teron say yesterday when he was co-hosting with Caroline that he could even see a scenario they just move out of the first round altogether and get extra picks for the rest of the draft.
Well, especially since so many teams are looking to get quarterbacks in this draft, and there's four that'll probably go in the top 10, that's just going to push down, you know, everybody else, these top-level tackles, top wide receivers. So, honestly, I don't hate that idea. Paul Kaharsky comes on every week with us on Wednesdays for Robbie and Rex Road, and that's what he's been preaching since the beginning. He says that he's like, move back, get more picks, because you're not looking for a quarterback in this year's draft. You know, if they decide to go get one, that's a whole nother story. But if you're solid with Ryan Tannehill right now and you're looking to give up that 11th spot to maybe somebody who's looking to, whether they're trying to move up or whatever somebody's trying to do, and accumulate picks in the second round, because you can still find high, high level tackles in the second round that are able to start for you day one in our NFL ready. And the more picks you can get, kind of like we've seen the Predators, you know, accumulate draft picks, then it's up to Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel hitting on them. But, you know, the more options you have, then could you draft two offensive linemen?
Yeah.
Then you have to make less moves in free agency to go maybe get like a big time guy who you're gonna have to pay a lot of money to. And you could have two tackles who are on rookie contracts, and then maybe a Nicholas Petit-Frere. And there's three guys who could be part of your future moving forward, part of your offensive line for the next however many years they're in the league.
My question's gonna be, are we gonna have a resolution on Ben Jones by the time we get to free agency next week? Now, the legal tampering period starts Monday. Free agency opens a week from today. You know, so I think that really is something that they need to know. And maybe they know and we don't. But, you know, I feel like that needs to be resolved. Is he going to be back? Are they going to cut him? Is he going to retire? You know, what's going to happen? Because that there's a financial aspect to that, and obviously who's going to be the center of this team. Because I'm of the belief, if it's not Ben Jones, that they could have Corey Levin and then Brewer fight it out for that spot, and, you know, not necessarily address that in the draft or free agency. Then, you know, you got to get a left tackle, and then you're likely going to have to get two guards. Because Nate Davis is gone. I am convinced Nate Davis is gone now.
Yeah, I am too. I think that would have been something they would have got done earlier than it would have already happened, or they would have been working towards it. And just by Mike Vrabel's comments too at the combine, saying, yeah, we might need five new offensive linemen, that kind of gives me the sense of, okay, yeah, Nate's gone. Nate Davis is gone. Ben Jones, maybe he's already told them that he wants to retire, throw in the towel.
I think he may look
at this team and think, we have a new general manager. We're not really sure the direction. It's not a go-for-it year. Hey, maybe they think it is. Who knows? But looking at this roster, his age, I think that he probably will retire. So you have those guys at options. Say you draft a Paris Johnson Jr. You have a Nicholas Petit-Frere. You mentioned the two guys fighting for center. So then you need – then you have two more spots to fill, which if you look at the offensive linemen free agency market right now, it looks a lot better than the wide receiver free agency market right now. We've talked about Orlando Brown Jr., right? He's going to be a hot name, but he's also going to be very, very expensive. We've talked about a guy who used to play here, Roger Saffold, who you could sign to a two-year
– he won't be expensive.
Two-year $8 million deal, nine? He signed a one-year 6.2 with Buffalo when he left the Tennessee Titans. So there's a guy who is durable. He's been in the league. He's been in your offense before. He knows everybody in this organization and was just a cap casualty last year. I think he's a guy that you could – or you could sign him to a one-year contract. I mean, and then
well, he's got to be willing to do that, but let's see. I'm trying to look something up real quick with him. Because I would love Big Raj back.
Oh, I'm sure Vrabel would
so
too.
You said 2 years, so $16 million, so eight per? Is that what you're saying?
No, not eight per. I'm saying so 10, five per.
Five per.
Two-year deal, though. He just signed a one-year.
Oh, I was because his the calculated market value is about 5.4. You get him for that, sign me up. I'm all about that.
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking like total for the 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. But yeah, no, I would, I'd sign up for that. So he was making, you know, he was supposed to make like 11 per when he was on his contract with the Titans before.
Then he signed the 1 year, $6 million in Buffalo.
Yeah. So if you can get him, I mean, if you can get him on the cheap at five and a half, six and a half, somewhere in that range, I would, yes. And you know that would be something that the Titans would be, you'd feel really good about, especially if you're going to have a rookie left tackle next to him and
exactly.
and a young center. Mm-hmm. You know, you have that veteran in the middle because I don't want to see five offensive linemen that are first and second year players.
No, that
you know,
is.
I want to see some experience.
Especially because of the importance of them all working together. And if you have five guys out there, I mean, we saw some of it this year. You had the solid Ben Jones at center, but even his health towards the end of the year when he had those back-to-back concussions, you can tell there's a lack of communication when you have guys who are inexperienced out there. And the line is just so important that you are all on the same page. And if you could get, like we mentioned, a Roger Saffold or another veteran guy in free agency to kind of break it up in there, even just to help some of the rookies as they are transitioning into the league. A guy like Roger Saffold has been very successful at his position over, I mean, I don't even know how long he's been in the league. He's up there, though. And to have him in that room. Are you laughing?
You always call me out. Don't call me out. I'm just laughing.
Oh.
I'm just laughing. Don't worry about it.
And, I mean, he would be great. So he's a guy you're looking at. And then I'm also looking at a Orlando Brown Jr. who's going to be it's going to be pricier.
I would love Orlando Brown Jr.
He's going to be pricey, though.
I don't think they're going to pay the money. Like, I don't – everything that is kind of out there and that I've heard and talking to people, they're not going to spend a lot of money. They're just not. And the money is going to go to Jeffrey Simmons – and they're going to have a lot of young and value type players.
What about who's the San Francisco guy who Jared set on now, whose name's escaping me?
The tackle, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because
Orlando Brown Jr., he's still young. No, not
Trent Williams.
He's still young where he's looking to get that big contract, but I think the San Francisco.
Mike McGlinchey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit older, correct?
I don't know how old he is.
Let's see.
I know he's
28, so They're similar ages, 26 and 28. But, I mean, he's a guy who also has that connection with Rand Carthon. I don't know how much that weighs in a situation like this, but he was the 9th overall pick in the 2018 draft. Elite run blocker for 5 seasons. I mean, that's the type of guy you want. They have to work on their pass protection, but I mean,
would you rather have a veteran at left guard or left tackle?
Tackle.
In an ideal world, I would probably say the same thing, but I really like these guys in this draft. Yeah. So I'd probably go for the guard because the guard's going to be cheaper too.
Yeah, the guard will be cheaper. I think when you look at it, if we're just talking in general, you always think, you know, your left tackle, right? But looking at the guys in this year's draft in combination with the free agent market, I think that I would say guard, especially because you're going to probably have a new guy at center. You're not going to have Ben Jones in the middle of everything. And that's just speculating that he's going to retire.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel pretty good about that he's going to retire. But we'll see. Coming up next, the first vote in the stadium with the council happened last night. We'll discuss that in the new Titan Stadium. Do that coming up next. Play hooky and join 102.5 The Game at Jasper's, located at 1918 Weston Avenue, Thursday, March 16th. For the first day of tournament games, that's next week. While you're there, take advantage of the shot and beer special. That's a shot of Nelson's Greenbrier Tennessee Whiskey plus a bottled domestic beer for just $10. Jasper's oversized bar, TVs, and game room make them the place to catch all the games. So join us next week for that. We'll talk some stadium next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
To do that right and not in a haphazard way means you want to put in the right infrastructure. And so the East Bank plan, the process that occurred through a planning process called Imagine East Bank, is really the largest planning process that has occurred in Nashville in many years. What that included is affordable housing, a park alongside the river that would lead up to a stadium that's essentially the size of, on the scale of a Centennial Park, includes a transit hub and a north-south transit spine there. So all of the infrastructure that is not going to be part of the stadium project, we believe that the infrastructure on the East Bank will largely be paid for by developers that will be developing the land, including the 60 acres that the city is getting back in this deal.
That was yesterday on Stillman & Company. Ben Eagles from the mayor's office came in studio with Jared Stillman. Back here, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. So there are 3 votes the Metro Council has to go through when it comes to the new stadium. The first vote was last night. It did pass. And so one hurdle has been completed. There were 10 council members that voted against the plan. And there was a small group of opposition that came to the Metro Courthouse to share their concerns. And you know, with any major project like this, even though the way the plan has been laid out by Mayor John Cooper, you know, obviously nothing's free. It's a $2.1 billion thing. You know, how much is it going to cost the taxpayer, all that? I get those concerns. But the way the deal is set right now with the current stadium is going to cost more money to do that in the long term, and it is more money to the taxpayer. With this deal, you know, there's hotel taxes, basically trying to get tourists to pay for it. I have always been, you know, for that. We get so many people that come to our city every day that I would rather see a hotel tax increase and make the visitors pay for it. Like, y'all pay for our stuff. Y'all are here using it, so
no,
y'all pay for it.
Well, I mean, that's part of the reason why Nashville's gotten so expensive, too, is because it's become such a hot city that people visit. And what was the stat for a long time of like 100 people a day moving here or something? But, you know, take that out of the equation. Just people visiting here all the time. I am all for taxing because, listen, they're going on vacation. You can spend the money. But it's going to become an attraction, right? So, you know, people who are going to want to come see a new stadium if their team's in town. It's going to lure people to come here even more than it already is, because it's not just going to be a stadium. There's going to be restaurants, and it's going to be like a whole – it's not going to be a Jerry's World, but it's going to be a whole complex, right, the whole East Bank. So it's doing more than just adding a new stadium here, but it also is going to be able to bring major events to the city of Nashville. Could the city of Nashville host a Super Bowl someday? I mean, that's a huge thing.
You get a
thing.
New stadium? It's, yes.
It's an investment. But I do look at it of, you know, everything in that East Bank. I'm sure they'll probably tax everything in there, too. Is that included
on it?
Of course.
I mean, there's...
So it's not just going to be for...
Yeah, and they want to build the stadium, and then they want to build around the stadium, which are things that they should have done to begin with, and they didn't. But you look at what Atlanta's done with Truist Park and that area.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is a great model for any city. You know, Cincinnati. You just got back from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So down there by Great American Ballpark and the Paul Brown, whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
There's the banks in that cool area. You
Very
know,
cool.
That's what you need. So I think that if you can try and do some of that around here and have, you know, a similar atmosphere like you have on Broadway where you walk. I mean, how many cities do you walk out of the arena mm-hmm. and you're right there in the middle of everything?
I mean, that was one of the coolest things that I experienced when I first moved here to Nashville. I mean, growing up in New York State, I'm 5 hours from the Bills, you know, two and a half from the Jets, Giants. And those stadiums don't have that. It's a completely unique and different experience here in Nashville. I mean, you talk about the Tennessee Titans, but also Bridgestone. I mean, the ability to go to a live sporting event and not have to think about where you're going to go after, because you're just going to walk out the door and, oh, we'll hit this spot and then we'll hit that spot. I mean, it's the center of the city and so many things. And with Nashville expanding onto like the other parts, right? They just built Fifth and Broadway, which is a whole nother area for shops and restaurants. And it is, I think, the perfect model, because it's not only going to give people the experience they want when going to a sporting event, whether it be beforehand or after, it's going to make people want to come back to your city.
Yeah. So I've put on my Twitter account at Chase on Game a very simple question. Do you want a new Titan Stadium?
Yes or no?
So go vote at Chase on Game. We've retweeted it from 102.5 The Game. I am curious of how that's going to go. I'm surprised I haven't done this yet, you know. But, I mean, and right now.
Yes or no question.
Right now it's running away with 85% saying yes. So
you got 30 votes so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken off. So I want to know. Now, I get – so I'm going to say two things. We're in this position because when the current stadium, Nissan Stadium, was built, you had a city that was not a pro sports town. We had Greer Stadium, which at that point Greer was outdated, mm-hmm. and there was all this debate on what to do there. And the arena they had, you know, the arena and the stadium was all happening around the same time, because you had the NBA was interested in coming here, and I don't know if you knew that. So
it was the Sacramento Kings.
No, well. They may have been a part of it, and then it was expansion, and then there was another team. I think you're right. I think it might have been the Sacramento
Kings. Yeah.
But I think there was a second team too. But so that was a possibility. The Mayor Bredesen, you know, got the arena deal done. And then it kind of shifted to the NHL. The New Jersey Devils were potentially going to move here. They got a new stadium, and then Craig Leopold ended up getting an expansion franchise, and that's how we got the Preds. But the NFL, Memphis had fought for the NFL for years, and they had the stadium. But at that point, the Liberty Bowl had gotten kind of dilapidated. And I don't know if you knew this, but the NFL in 95, when they expanded, it was Memphis was in the mix, and then Jacksonville and Charlotte and Carolina. Obviously, Jacksonville and the Panthers ended up getting – or Carolina ended up getting their teams – But we were in such a different spot that it just – I think if you could go back and redo that deal, you would do it. You know, Bud Adams was going to be cheap. He wasn't going to pay for it. That's why, you know, got out of Houston.
Yeah.
If you could go back and redo it, then I think you'd go back and redo it. Do this one right. And I think they're trying to do this one right where you can get more than just 20-something years out of it.
I agree. And, I mean, I think they – it's set that it will be a dome, correct? They're not doing a retractable.
No, it'll be Jared just – so it was – you were right. It was the Kings. The deal was all but done, and the city of Sacramento took out a loan to keep them. The Kings and the Devils basically used Nashville as leverage.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's I thought it was the Kings. But
because there's a lot of elements to that building, to Bridgestone Arena, that are more NBA than they are. Like, there's a few things they kind of had to retrofit, you know, because they were – when they started it, it was
because they first thought that it was going to be – I mean, and now you look at Bridgestone and it hosting basketball this weekend. Yeah. But, I mean, I think if you kind of look at it from the outside – and obviously that happened a long time ago, but it's kind of cool that Nashville actually got to build their own franchise, right?
Yeah,
they got to have the Predators rather than another team coming here.
And it worked out for the state because you got the Grizzlies 3 hours away – in Memphis, mm-hmm. and then you got the Preds here. And I know there's not much of a crossover. It's gotten a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you've read into it. There's this whole Nashville-Memphis thing, and it's always been there. But it's gotten better. Like, I love going to Memphis. So
Grizzlies games are fun.
Yeah. But so that's the first hurdle. And good job to Jared yesterday because he actually had both sides. He had the mayor's office, which is obviously for it. Mm-hmm. And then had Bob Mendez, who's on the council that, you know, had some opposition. And so you kind of got both sides of it yesterday. You can check that out at thegamenashville.com. So very well done by him. But the next votes will happen on April 4th and April 18th for the
Coming
new
up.
Titan Stadium. Coming up next, we will talk to Colton Sissons, Predators forward, and as I like to call him, a glue guy. We'll do that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you on a Wednesday. We will get Colton Sissons in just a second. I know Nick is working on that behind the scenes. Predators will be back in action tomorrow against the Arizona Coyotes. I'll have pregame for you at 7 o'clock. I'll be at Bridgestone Arena in Barrel House, our usual location, which will be really cool as the SEC tournament will be ongoing. Vanderbilt, do they tip at 7 or 8?
Vanderbilt will tip at – okay, so that's going to be – so the game before them is Arkansas-Auburn at 6 and then 25 minutes after that game. So 8-ish,
probably 8,
8:30.
Yeah. See, I like that. So the Predators and Vanderbilt will start around the same time.
Yes, because we got a West Coast game.
I'm glad there are multiple TVs in Barrel House.
So I feel very bad for Willie Donick.
Makes it. Oh, I know.
He's going to be stressed.
I've told him because I can. I've gotten to know him well enough that I can always tell, like even on TV when he's he's checking like his mood, like you're going to have to just not look. You got to focus on the task at hand.
Max Hurst, if you're listening, you need to somehow. Oh well, he's going to be calling the game too. So
yeah.
Both of them, both the Vandy alums, they'll have trouble.
They don't get to watch. All right, let's say hello to Colton Sissons, who is on the road, obviously with the Predators and Phoenix right now. Colton, good morning. How are you?
Morning.
Doing well, thank you. Good morning, guys.
So I want to start with something that I have been saying about you in a very, very good way. I've always looked at you as a glue guy with this team. Obviously, a lot of changes have happened over the course of the last couple of weeks, which I know is tough on a locker room. But, you know, you emerge as one of the leaders on this team. You've had a letter on your sweater the last few games. What does it mean to you to know that not only the coaches and management, but your teammates have that trust in you that you can be one of those guys to help take this team to a new place?
Yeah, it means a lot to me. You know, it's something I didn't take lightly, and, you know, I've been working towards hopefully having a letter on my jersey in this league for a long time. So, you know, it felt really good. You know, it doesn't really change too much, to be quite honest with you. I feel like I've been in the kind of core group of the leadership on this team for a number of seasons now. So Definitely proud of that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how do you feel like things have been now that the trade deadline's come and gone, stuff's settling down, Mr. Poile makes his move, obviously, in his announcement that he's going to retire, Barry Trotz, who you played for Barry very early in your career, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, pretty briefly my rookie season. I think I played about, I don't know, 17, 18 games, something like that for Barry.
Yeah, so obviously all that happens. What's been the mood of the locker room now that things have kind of settled down and you can just focus on playing the games?
I think everyone's mood is a little bit better after the deadline had passed. It was a stressful week. It's always tough losing some teammates and close buddies. So we were happy to get through that and move forward. So we got a lot of new life in the locker room, a lot of young guys coming up and already having big impacts on games and helping us win and get points. So things are going very well. I'm happy with where we're at, and the atmosphere has been pretty good.
Talking to Colton Sissons, Predators forward, you mentioned some of the young guys. Luke Evangelista has come in and been on fire. 3 points in his first four games. He had a two-goal night the other night in Vancouver. What have you seen out of him?
He's a pretty confident young player. He's got the talent. You know, everyone knows that, and you can see it. But really impressed with his poise and confidence and his first couple of games. I think he's going to be a good player in this league for a long time. So been really happy with him.
When you see a young player come up, and I don't know what it was like for you, you know, when you first started in the NHL, but do you kind of have to have that mix of, you mentioned confidence, but maybe a little bit of cockiness to go along with it, as long as you keep it in check?
Yeah, I think so. It's all good if you have some swagger and some confidence to you. You certainly don't want to have too much of that maybe off the ice, but when you get out there, you definitely need that edge to your game, and that young man has it, I'll tell you.
We've got Colton Sissons on with us. Colton, you kind of touched on some of the young guys there right now, but you've been in this league for a while now, and you've experienced, what it's like to fight for a playoff spot towards the end of the season. Now wearing that A on your jersey and holding more of a leadership role, what do you tell some of these young guys, and what can you say just to the way that they've stepped up in different scenarios as you head into the final stretch of this season?
I mean, we're not talking about anything different. I'm quite honest with you. We go through our, our usual routines. We know exactly how we'd like to approach the game and a style of play that we need to have success and, get wins and do things like that. Heinze does a great job of keeping us dialed in and keeping our minds right, staying in the hunt here. But, we've had so many different guys step up recently and, throughout the season. Cody Glass emerging this year, and Tommy Novak's been just playing out of his mind. So we've had countless guys stepping up this year, and call-ups from Milwaukee and young guys like Evangelista as well. So can't say enough about those guys. They're a big reason why we're still in the mix here.
Got Colton Sissons on with us. After the trade deadline and all the moves that you all made and also bringing some young guys up from Milwaukee, do you think that this road trip has given your team an ability to bond a little bit more after so much just tenseness with the trade deadline hanging over your head and so many different moves? Has this road trip given you guys an opportunity to bond kind of off the ice a little bit more?
Yeah, road trips are always great for that. Obviously, we're on a long one here. 13 days is a lot of bonding, but it's been good, especially with some of the younger players and new faces that have been called up from Milwaukee who haven't really spent a lot of time with us. It's great to get everybody together and have that bonding and just get everybody comfortable. And, the tighter you can get the group, the better the product is on the ice. So we do a good job of that around here.
And I know you had to enjoy being in Vancouver, being a BC guy, and Dante as well. I know Johansson's not on the trip, but what was it like being back home?
It's always great. See some family, have a home cooked meal at my mom and dad's house. So they always have me feeling pretty good heading into the games at home.
So you mentioned earlier in the interview that you played a handful of games for Barry Trotz. I don't know how much time you've really gotten to spend with him since he's officially been back as a, you know, kind of an advisor, but well, what are your thoughts on him coming in and giving his view on things after leaving the Predators and winning a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, we're excited. You know, I got to know Barry a little bit back in my younger career, and he was a terrific coach. His resume says it all, but he's a great man. He really cares about you know, the organization, the players, just everything. He's got a huge heart. So, you know, I think that along with his experience of winning a cup is going to have this team heading in a very exciting direction.
So we're going to have a little fun, but as we let you go, I got a pair of tickets to give away when you guys take on Seattle on the 25th. There's kind of a big thing happening before that game with a statue being out front of the arena, which I know has to be exciting for all of you to honor Pekka in that way. But fans that want to go to that game need to answer this question. Colton, you currently wear the number 10, but you did not wear that number when you first got called up to the Predators and the NHL. Fans need to tell me 615-737-1025, the first number that Colton wore with the Nashville Predators. First person to do that wins a pair of tickets to see Preds take on Seattle on March 25th. So I think people are going to be able to get that, but we'll see.
All right. Yeah, I think that should be doable.
Colton, thanks so much for the time today. Best of luck against Arizona, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Colton.
Yeah, nice chatting with you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Colton Sissons joining us here on the show. And again, 615-737-1025. What was the first number that Colton Sissons wore with the Nashville Predators? You get that answer, you will go see the Preds take on Seattle on March 25th. Colton's one of those guys that, you know, when I was working, you know, every game and doing interviews, that win, lose, whatever, he was always willing to talk. So I always appreciate that, you know, guys like that, that, you know, will kind of tell it like it is in whatever the situation may be. And he's stepped up. He's had to step up. He's right. He's been in the leadership group the last few years, but he's had to step up even more over the course of the last few weeks because of all the changes that are happening mm-hmm. with the team. And it will be no different tomorrow as they take on Arizona, 2 points that they need to get.
Yeah, and they're sitting right now with like a 23% chance to make the playoffs on Money Puck. But, you know, Colton, I loved his answer. He's like, yeah, 13 days. That's a long bonding trip or whatever.
I'm like, a lot of bonding.
I should have been like, so who are you getting sick of? Who's been annoying? I'm kidding.
He would have said Hal Gill.
There you go. That is the correct answer. But no, I mean, I think that this team, and he mentioned it to you when you asked about, you know, does the locker room feel like they can breathe kind of now? You can breathe out. It's so many changes. I mean, just listening to our station and us talking about it, it felt like every day it was something new for that week, that two weeks ago now. I mean, think if you were in that locker room, the stress and trying to get that playoff spot still. And now there aren't expectations like that. So for them to be able to go on this road trip, some of the young guys play a little bit more loosely. And I think Colton said that. He's like, you know, we're just same message, bonding, and we're able to kind of breathe a little bit now that trade line's gone.
Nick, do we have a winner?
Yeah, Logan is our winner today.
And the answer was?
He wore number 84.
Ooh.
84, that is correct. Just like Tanner Janot, his former linemate. So Colton debuted in the number 84, and I thought he played for Barry. I couldn't remember, but he did play a handful of games for Barry Trotz his rookie year. Coming up next, SEC tournament gets underway tonight, and I know I'm excited. Michelle's excited. We'll give you a preview. We'll do that next on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join 102.5 The Game live from the Rusty Nail on Friday, March 17th for the opening round of the tournament. Enjoy $3 two-lane beer drafts while watching some hoops during a St. Patrick's Day celebration. The Rusty Nail is located in Hermitage and provides a great local atmosphere with a large outdoor patio and volleyball courts, plus great drinks and great food, especially the wings, and I love wings. That's 102.5 The Game live at Rusty Nail, 4054 Andrew Jackson Way in Hermitage. On Friday, March 17th, doors open at 10. Looking forward to that. Back here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle here with you. Appreciate Colton Sissons for joining us in the last segment as the Predators will take on Arizona tomorrow. But tonight, it all gets underway at Bridgestone Arena. The 2023 SEC Tournament will tip off 6 o'clock, the first game. Ole Miss taking on South Carolina. That'll be a barn burner, let me tell you. And then LSU-Georgia. And both of these games are significant to teams that we talk about around here.
Exactly.
The winner of Ole Miss-South Carolina takes on Tennessee tomorrow, which will be roughly 2:30, 3 o'clock, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
After Mississippi State-Florida. And then the winner of LSU-Georgia will take on Vanderbilt tomorrow night, that after Arkansas and Auburn. So, obviously, you know, Vandy fans, Tennessee fans will be paying attention to that. But I'm excited about this tournament. The matchups and how the seeding works, I think, is going to create some fun matchups and fun games. I mean, Mississippi State, Florida, I would pick Florida in that one. Even though Mississippi State's trying to fight and stay alive, you know, Vandy beating them certainly didn't help them. The winner of that game would get Alabama on Friday at noon. Tennessee, you know, playing South Carolina or Ole Miss, winner of that one gets Missouri on Friday because Missouri has a double bye. Alabama, Missouri, Texas A&M, Kentucky all have the double bye.
Yep.
And then you got Arkansas, Auburn, the winner of that game takes on A&M, and then the winner of LSU, Georgia, and Vanderbilt takes on Kentucky.
So Auburn's a team that traditionally you'll see in the tournament. They're fighting for a spot still, Vanderbilt as well. Locks right now for the tournament, I've got the top four: Bama, Missouri, Texas A&M, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Arkansas, and then, as I mentioned, Auburn question mark, Vanderbilt question mark. So it should be interesting, right? I mean, all the teams with the double byes, those games won't be until Friday, but as you mentioned, I'm sure Vanderbilt probably wants to get a shot at LSU again to play tomorrow. I'm getting my dates mixed up, but I'm sure they probably want another shot at LSU after their loss earlier this year. The games are going to be interesting. I mean, we kind of were talking about this earlier, and we mentioned it to Joe Rexrow, taking a look just at the SEC as a whole, traditionally known as the dominant football conference. I mean, the last couple of years, the college basketball in the SEC specifically has been so competitive, and so many teams have been ranked nationally. You know, I think of the Auburn team a couple years ago, Tennessee, Kentucky's always in the mix, but teams like Texas A&M with Buzz Williams, Jerry Stackhouse, and Vanderbilt stepping up, Missouri this year, Alabama with Nate Oates. I mean, it really is wide open, and I know that everybody's going to think Alabama is the clear favorite because nationally they are the best team, I think, but in tournaments like this and the way they're set up, having to win games back to back to back, I really would say that this tournament is wide open, and yeah. I don't have a true number one team I'm ready to crown.
So if I had to make a pick, and I'll kind of build up to it. So you said this off the air, and I agree with you. I think Alabama is going to hit a roadblock. With everything going on, it's going to catch up to them. And so I just feel like Alabama's going to stumble somewhere. And maybe they get to the final, but I feel like they may not. Like that Missouri, the winner, if Tennessee gets to that 4-5.
Bless you.
Felt it coming. If Tennessee gets to that matchup against Missouri, then I could see the winner of that game catching Alabama. And catching them off guard and getting the win. So that could be a possibility. The team I you know, Texas A&M is interesting. I think Texas A&M, Buzz Williams, they're pretty good. I'm not doing this because you're my co-host, but I think I'm going Kentucky. Because Cal gets them hot at the right time, and they're getting hot at the right time.
Well, and, you know, not to put my fan cap on or anything like that, because I feel like a lot of times when I do talk about them, just from a college basketball standpoint, they were a team that was ruled out very, very early this year with a couple of their bad losses. I mean, a South Carolina loss in there, a Georgia loss in there. They had a very, very tough start to their season. But I think now you see them clicking because they have so many guys. I mean, Antonio Reeves wasn't on this team last year. Chris Livingston, Cason Wallace, right? Like, it was a new starting five altogether, whereas you look at this Tennessee team, maybe a more veteran team, they were very much like, they knew each other. They had played together when they started the season off and had a lot of great wins early in the season. But I do look at this team that C.J. Fredericks has a cracked rib earlier this year, so he's struggling through that. But Jacob Toppin has really, really emerged, I think, as a great college basketball player. And Obi Toppin's younger brother, ain't no stopping Obi Toppin. But it'll be interesting. I think if they have a couple good games, I think they could win it. I think Texas A&M will be a tall task. And, of course, Alabama's going to be a tall task. But I think it'd be cool to see if them in Tennessee
get
another rematch.
Oh, I think that would be fantastic, too, if it could get to that. But I think this is just going to be a competitive tournament. You know, and you're going to have Vanderbilt that's fighting to stay alive. Because if Vandy beat, you know, if obviously Vandy has to beat LSU or Georgia, then they get Kentucky. If they were to get past Kentucky, then I'm not ruling out them all the way to the final, because that's just, that's a team playing with determination without their best player. The problem is, like, if Liam Robbins was playing, my answer might be different for who wins the tournament. But I gotta see it. You know, when the pressure's really up without Liam Robbins. Getting Kentucky, drawing Kentucky in the quarters is tough, but we will see. We'll have coverage for you from Bridgestone Arena the next couple of days. Our shows will be there starting tomorrow with this show
at 9 o'clock.
Maybe a special guest. You never know. Stick around, though. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, that's coming up next. They'll talk about Derrick Henry rumors, the SEC tournament. I know Willie is going to have his bracketology. Can't wait for that. That is all next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.